Okay, our second case of the morning, Deutsche Bank versus, is it Wunsch or Wench? How is it? Wench? Thank you very much. Counsel, are you prepared to proceed? Please do.
Good morning. I'm Attorney Thomas Dill with the law firm of BP Peterman and one of the co-counsels for the plaintiff petitioner in this matter. I'm here to introduce Kenneth Lee Marshall, who is here by pro hac vice. He is a California attorney in good standing and has agreed to adhere to all the rules of the professional conduct of Wisconsin and the Fifth Judicial District.
Has he been admitted in this case pro hac vice before?
Not in the state.
Okay, so your comment then is a motion to this court for his admission, pro hac vice.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, he was approved by the court for pro hac vice March 28th.
Oh, fine. Very good, very good. Well, thank you for the introduction. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, and thank you for allowing me to appear before you.
Well, we're pleased to have you, but I do want to say that I'm not sure how many titles Deutsche Bank has and whether Deutsche Bank is the same as Deutsche Bank National Trust Company or any of the others. But Deutsche Bank, does investment for some smallish IRA I have, but I've never been in personal communication with them, and I don't control the investment. So I just wanted to tell that to everybody, and that I think I can be a fair, neutral, impartial, and nonpartisan in relation to this matter relating to Deutsche Bank National Trust Company. But because it doesn't show on my economic interest statement or elsewhere that you could find it, I am making revelation now.
Thank you, Your Honor. And Deutsche Bank is the trustee of the trust that owns this loan,
yes.
Your Honor.
Not my trustee.
Right. So I want to start with what is not in dispute here. It is not disputed that Mr. Wunsch signed a promissory note to finance the purchase of this property, and that Exhibit 1 is a copy of that note. It is not in dispute that he is in default on that note, having not made a payment since 2008. And it is not disputed that the trial court made factual findings here that the note presented was the original wet ink note and that the plaintiff was in possession of it. So the issue here is really a narrow one, and one as to whether or not the trial court the trial court's factual findings were clearly erroneous. And put another way, the issue is whether or not the plaintiff may present the original note to the finder of fact to demonstrate its possession, or whether it needs to have oral testimony on that issue.
And Counsel, for the business records exception, you have affidavit or certificate. And not oral testimony. So is it correct to frame the question, and I genuinely don't know, is it correct to frame the question as oral testimony, or is it more precise to say evidence on that issue, however presented, whether by affidavit or by certificate as allowed for in the regular business records exception, or?
Well, I think, you know, our position is that you can do it either way. You can either present the original note at trial, as we did, or you can present some kind of testimonial evidence, whether it is by way of affidavit or oral testimony.
So it doesn't have to be an either or, and one of the sides of that or being only oral testimony. It can be an evidentiary testimonial presentation. How does that? Whether it is words coming out of someone's mouth on a witness stand or via affidavit or certificate.
If it's if it's an undisputed affidavit, for example, on summary judgment as to possession, I believe that would be acceptable, and I think the courts in Wisconsin have recognized that.
And a regular records exception, there is the process. You have a certificate that takes care of all of this, and you give notice of the as I understand the rule, you give notice to the certification, or the certificate, rather, and ahead of time, and it's all taken care of.
Alternatively, people will bring the original note to a summary judgment hearing to demonstrate possession of it and that they have the original note. And that's another alternative for demonstrating possession. You know, this is really not a new issue. We cited a case from Lord Mansfield in 1758 where he talks about the holder in possession, the bearer of the note, and the ability to negotiate it. We also cited a case from the Eighth Circuit from 122 years ago, which addressed this specific issue, that plaintiff's counsel showing up at trial with the original note in hand created a legal presumption that the plaintiff was in possession of it. And that makes sense because the counsel is the agent for his or her client.
And so, where the defendant denies this and puts you to the proof, what happens to the presumption?
Well,
that's what happened here, didn't it?
So, Your Honor, I would disagree with that. What the defendant testified that he believed that this was not the original. He did not deny signing a version of this note. He did not deny that Exhibit 1 was a copy of the note that he signed. He merely denied that this was the original that showed up at trial.
Okay, if he denied that that was the original, then he denies that the copy is a copy of what he signed and was the original.
He believed that the original wet ink note that was produced at trial was not the original because there were not indentations from the signature.
Right.
And the judge in this case did not find that testimony to be particularly credible because I think he observed, for example, that this note had probably been on a file for a long period of time and without expert testimony that the indentations would still be there after 8 years.
Why was the trial court testifying?
The trial counsel was not testifying.
No, no, no. The judge was. The judge said, I look at this original, and looks like an original, and the copy looks like a copy of the original, and this looks like his signature, and this is all A-OK. The judge did all that. Since when does the judge decide? Why was the judge the expert witness on what's original, what's a good copy? I don't understand that. I mean, I was initially very surprised when I read all that.
I read that differently, Your Honor. I don't think that the judge was testifying. I don't think he was acting as an expert witness. I think he was doing precisely what was required of him in this bench trial. He was the finder of fact. He was making findings of fact in his proper role. And he was asked to look at the original, compare it to the copy so that the copy could be admitted into evidence as Exhibit 1, because the original doesn't get admitted into evidence because the plaintiff needs to maintain custody of it. And in his role, he made the observation, I'm comparing the two. This looks like the original to me. Then in paragraph 6 of his findings of fact.
Is that what you'd ask a jury to do?
Well, this was not a jury tried case,
know,
Your Honor.
But would you, he's the fact finder. Is that what you'd ask the fact finder jury to do?
I
have to present evidence, testimonial evidence.
Well, Your Honor, we have the self-authentication provision of section 902.02, which says that when you have commercial paper, you don't have to present testimonial evidence to have it admitted into evidence.
Mm-hmm. This isn't about self-authentication, is it? Isn't it about possession?
Possession. Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, a determination that this was the original note, and therefore it was admitted into evidence under the self-authentication provisions of 902.02.
Are the issues before us self-authentication or possession?
I don't really believe that it is. Well, the defendant has introduced new arguments on appeal as to the self-authentication issues, but I don't really believe that I don't believe it is in dispute that an original of commercial paper such as this note is entitled to the benefit of the self-authentication provisions of 902.02. And so the question is, what was the evidence of possession? And the evidence of possession here, Your Honor, was that plaintiff's counsel was in possession of the note at trial. He handed the note to the judge. The judge looked at it, determined that it was the original note.
Counsel, was there ever any suggestion that the trial counsel was acting on his own behalf as opposed to the plaintiff?
No.
Okay.
Of course not.
And trial counsel entered his appearance at the beginning of the proceeding?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so everyone was on notice that he was acting on behalf of the plaintiff at that point?
That is correct. And acting for a client in court is perhaps the quintessential example of the principal agency relationship that lawyers have on behalf of their clients.
And did the defendant ever put into controversy the matter of the plaintiff's standing to file the complaint?
No, Your Honor. That is what we as lawyers do. We represent our clients in court. And when I or another lawyer shows up with the original note in court on behalf of my client, the trial judge is perfectly able to make that observation that here is the plaintiff's counsel in possession of the original note. And based on that observation, based on that presentment in court, the trial judge is perfectly able to make the factual finding that plaintiff is in possession.
And if this had been a jury trial, the jury would have been competent to pass on the question of possession, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the jury also would have been competent to pass on the question of whether the note was an original.
Yes, Your Honor.
By examining it themselves or based on evidence presented?
By examining themselves.
Really? I
yes.
don't know that. It may be, but that causes me discomfort. So do you have authority that would be right on point for that?
I would point the court to two things. I mean, one is the series of cases that we have cited for the proposition that counsel can present the original of the note in court, and that is sufficient to demonstrate possession. And those cases go throughout the years, 120 years of precedent on that issue.
I told you that I felt some discomfort, but discomfort isn't the law, just like sometimes form over substance isn't the law. Sometimes form is the law, as in rules, you know. But you made an assertion that a jury would be able on its own to determine if a document was a copy or the original, and that is inconsistent with my experience as a trial judge. But my experience might be woefully inadequate, so that's why I ask, do you have any case on point to substantiate your assertion regarding what a jury can do?
I can't think of one right now. I think all the cases that we cited are either cases that were decided on summary judgment or they were bench trials, as these types of cases typically are. But what I would say to you, Your Honor, is that the principle behind having commercial paper freely negotiated, that it can be endorsed in blank, and that whoever is in possession of it, however they obtained it, may enforce it and may collect on it, is consistent with the principle that you don't need extensive evidence on this point. It's also consistent with Section 403.308 of Wisconsin.
Do you need any evidence? Isn't that the argument? It seems to me, following up Justice Kelly's question and your response, kind of dealing with the presumption, that's what I think in part this case focuses on, because I did not see any actual evidence presented on the issue of possession.
Well, we would disagree with that, Your
tell
Honor.
Tell me that.
The evidence, so twofold. The evidence of possession is the trial judge's own observation that the plaintiff is there physically possessing the note.
The attorney, that's what I talk about, the presumption.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I understand the question and answer previously exchanged, is that it was a reasonable presumption if the attorney is there as the agent of the principal, that the principal is in possession of the instrument, assuming that the attorney is in possession of the instrument. So that's the presumption. I'm talking about, other than the presumption, is there any evidence presented?
Well,
about on possession. Who testified to it?
I don't believe any other evidence is required, Your Honor, and I would cite to Section 403.308, which says, in an action with respect to an instrument, the authenticity of and authority to make each signature on the instrument is admitted unless specifically denied in the pleadings.
That's authentication. We're focusing on possession, which is a different issue.
Well, I think the evidence is simply what the trial court observed in court, which is, here is the note. I am in possession of it.
Counsel,
the trial court can make that observation on its own, and that factual finding based on that observation is entitled to deference. It can only be reversed upon a determination that it was clearly erroneous.
So let's say this is just a question of presumption. Presumptions are meant to be operative, right? So unless that presumption is rebutted, we take that presumed fact to be true. So in the case of possession, when the attorney is standing in the courtroom with the note in his hot little hand, we presume that it is in the possession of his client. And so now all presumptions by virtue of their nature are rebuttable. So what would it take to rebut that presumption, do you think? Would it take the defendant saying, hey, look, that attorney's not actually operating on behalf of his client at this moment as he's standing in the well of the court with the note in his hand. He's operating on behalf of someone else. Wouldn't that be what would be required to rebut the presumption?
I suppose it would have to be something like that if, in fact, such a presumption, when everyone in the courtroom could observe the presumption or observe the possession, whether that presumption could even be rebutted. I mean, this reminds me, you know, and I don't want to talk too much about case law outside of the state, but this does remind me of the Eighth Circuit's discussion in the 1895 case that we cited, where the court said the legal presumption was that they, meaning the plaintiff's attorneys, had received the notes from the hands of their client, and they had ceased to belong to the payee, and that they were the client's property. There was no occasion, therefore, for offering testimony to confirm the presumption before the notes were admitted into evidence. So I'm struggling to see how you really could rebut the presumption. I mean, the attorney is an officer of the court. He's entering an appearance for the client. He's clearly under the law an agent for the client in those circumstances. Here we have a corporate trust entity who is the plaintiff, and of course a corporation must appear by counsel. And so, you know, what other evidence is required here for possession? Then here it is. We have it.
Well, it would have been easy for the bank to bring in somebody who had personal knowledge that the bank had possession of this original note, and it was in its files, and that's what it was suing on. Wouldn't it have been rather simple to do that? I mean, this is not, if the bank had possession of it, this is not rocket science.
I would submit, Your Honor, that it would be simple, but it would also be cumulative, unnecessary, and on a repetitive basis, such as these cases are, expensive. So, for example, if we had
it's expensive for the defendant, too, and we're dealing with a note that's been transferred perhaps a number of times, that it there's a record in other of our cases that indicate that careful records were not kept of transfers, multiple transfers of notes and mortgages, and that business was transacted differently in 2000 plus years, in the year 2000 plus, than it had been before, of transferring notes and mortgages and bundling them. And the trial court indicated some problems here. They didn't think that the Deutsche Bank and Trust, National Trust Company, engaged in any problems, but that perhaps prior holders or transferees had, and was very concerned in this case of equity, foreclosures and equitable action, of how clean the hands were of various transferees.
So I would submit, Your Honor, when it is a note endorsed in blank, it doesn't matter what the history of the assignments were. And so certainly we could have brought in a witness from Deutsche Bank who would sit on the stand, and we would hand him or her the note, and we could ask the question, are you currently in possession of this note? And that would be sufficient. But would that really add anything to the proceedings?
Yes, because one testimony.
The prior history doesn't matter. They take possession of the note right there on the stand.
So if it could be shown that that Deutsche Bank had stolen this, that would not have been admissible and not a defense to this action?
As a holder in possession of a note endorsed in blank, I don't believe that that is a defense
You're repeating that it's a holder in possession when the issue is whether it is in possession.
Yes, Your Honor. And if the client representative shows up in court and the note is handed to him or her, then they will be in possession of the note. And so I would submit that that is cumulative of what happened here, and not necessary.
Counsel, are you familiar at all with, or either side, neither side cited Jax versus Jax, J-A-X v. J-A-X, 73 with second 572. And that was a promissory note case, but it dealt with the presumptions and the presumptions of validity and a signature being valid. And the last paragraph of that opinion, this court, Justice Day, said the defendant introduced no evidence to support a finding that the signature on the note was forged or unauthorized. The presumption of validity, therefore, is not rebutted. Furthermore, the plaintiff was not required to introduce expert testimony to support his claim. The trial judge, sitting as trier of fact, is entitled to make his own comparison of the signatures and, without the assistance of expert testimony, form his own opinion as to their authenticity. And then cites to bank cases, estate cases. I just wondered if you were at all familiar with that case and its application to Wisconsin law regarding presumptions.
I'm not familiar with that case. That was not a case I believe that either party cited, but it does seem perfectly consistent with our position here. And it's also consistent with 403.308, which says that the authenticity and validity of the signatures is presumed to be valid unless it's specifically contested in the pleadings, which it was not here. I see that my warning light is on, and I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal. So unless there are any further questions, I will reserve.
You automatically get 5 minutes here.
Okay.
Right. You have 5 minutes left in your time before us, but you'll come back for another 5 minutes.
Okay, very good. Then I would like to make a couple of other brief points. The Wisconsin appellate decisions that were cited, we believe, are consistent with these principles. The Thompson case, which was cited, that case rejected the use of a copy of a note at trial. And the court said, because nothing in the document itself demonstrates possession of the original note. And what we would suggest is the original note is the document itself that demonstrates its possession. The Dow Family versus PHH Mortgage rejected summary judgment because affidavits attaching, again, a copy of the note, the court said without the original note or a properly authenticated copy, there is no factual showing that PHH is entitled to enforce the note as the party in possession of a note endorsed in blank. We believe these cases are absolutely consistent with our position that showing up at trial with the original note is sufficient. The trial court made factual findings here. If the plaintiff shows up at trial in possession of the original note, then it should not be hard to affirm the trial court's finding that the plaintiff, in fact, possesses the original note. I have two brief comments, one brief comment really on the issue of standing, which was raised in their opposing brief but not raised earlier. A few brief comments. The standing, as it is described both in federal case law and in the jurisdictions that they cited, New York, Florida, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Oklahoma, is really a jurisdictional doctrine. I understand Wisconsin does not treat it as jurisdictional. It is a pragmatic, flexible doctrine. And in fact, when the real party in interest is, when there is thought to be a real party in interest problem in Wisconsin, generally the party is allowed an opportunity to correct that. So I just don't think that standing is really at issue here or applicable. Thank you, and I will
thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Krista Westerberg. With me here is Aaron Dumas. We're with Pinesbach, and we represent the Mr. Thomas Wunsch, who is also here today. This case is about a failure of proof, the failure of Deutsche Bank to show that it had a right to enforce a note and obtain a judgment of foreclosure. An essential element of that right is showing possession of the note. Deutsche Bank didn't offer admissible evidence of its possession. Instead, it says it's got a self-authenticating note.
Well, they handed over the original. Looks like they have possession of it.
The attorney handed over the original.
Right.
There was no witness to say it was either the original or actually in Deutsche Bank's possession. We don't have any testimony about where the attorney got the note. There are a lot of gaps in the record.
Counsel, who do you think possessed the note as the plaintiff's attorney was holding it in court?
Right. Well, the attorney did have the note, and I guess that goes to the matter of agency that has come up a few times already this morning.
Okay. Can you concede that he possessed the note, the trial counsel?
The trial court did found that it was the original note.
I know. Can you concede that the trial counsel possessed the note as he was holding it there in the courtroom?
I was not the trial counsel. Is that the question?
No. Can you concede that the trial counsel, whoever that was, for the bank, possessed the note as he was holding it there in the courtroom?
Sure. I'll concede it or at least assume it for purposes of argument today.
Okay. Now, did he possess it for his own behalf? Or did he possess it on behalf of his client?
Let me, if I may, it's not clear to me if your question is the it is the original note or any note. Would
sure.
You mind?
I'm happy to clarify that. The trial counsel held the original note in his hand in the courtroom. So what I'm wondering is, from your perspective, did he possess that original note on his own account or on account of his client?
He didn't really say. He didn't say who. He didn't say Deutsche Bank possessed the note. That was the Court of Appeals decision noted that he didn't even speak to possession.
Okay.
He did have it in his hand, though.
So who do you think that he possessed it on behalf of, himself or his client?
I don't know. He didn't say.
And
could trial counsel have enforced the note? You conceded he possessed it. He was then the bearer and the holder under the UCC. Could he have enforced the note on his own behalf?
That is an excellent question, Your Honor, because being the bearer of the note, well, first let me back up the statute. The statutes over and over use the word possession. The right to enforce a note is linked to possession. We see that in the definition of holder. We see that in the definition of bearer. We see it in 403.301 about persons entitled to enforce the note. And we see it in 403.205 about endorsement. So clearly possession is an important issue. And as the Dow Family Court described it, possession, it's as good, you know, if you come in with this note, that's as good as cash. So we want to have this right. So I think it's important in that sense to have a witness who can say Deutsche Bank possessed the note.
But the trial court judge also held the note in his hands, according to the record. Could he have enforced the note?
I don't think he was probably interested in enforcing the note. But it is linked to possession. It's one of these things in the law that is linked to physical possession. And the courts that have examined this question, like the Dow Family Court and PHC Bank and some of the unpublished cases that are in the Deutsche Bank's appendix, have emphasized the need to have a witness with knowledge, like you do any evidentiary fact, about who possessed the note. So
I'm sorry. Only if you were done answering.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is you have conceded that trial counsel for the bank held the note in his hands. For whom or for what entity was he in possession of the note? I mean, I think we can all agree he wasn't possessing it on his own behalf. He wasn't trying to enforce it. When the trial court judge held it in his hands, he wasn't trying to enforce it. Why isn't it enough for a bank's attorney to come into court with the original note endorsed in blank and represent to the court that this is held in the possession of his client and he's holding it for his client? Why isn't that enough?
Because that is not evidence. That's not evidence that we have accepted. It's not a witness with knowledge. It's not an admission by the defendant. It's not in some admissible document. It's not something we have accepted as evidence. That's why they're asking for a presumption, because they haven't pointed to any evidence that there was possession by Deutsche Bank.
But, counsel, one thing you said a few minutes ago caught my attention. You said something along the lines of, it, in reference to the note, it's similar to cash. I think that's the gist of what you said, right?
Yes. I was stealing from the Dow Family case, Court of Appeals decision, that characterized the note as good as cash.
Fair enough. So does it seem, it strikes me, and maybe you can help me out with this, as a little bit circular to say, if someone comes in with the blank note, which I guess I compare to a bearer bond, and when someone walks into a bank, I suppose setting aside the relatively new rules about the structuring laws that are in place now for the anti-terrorism, the $10,000 limit. It used to be nobody asked any questions. The bearer of the bond presented it. He or she who had possession of the bearer bond received the fruits of the bond. So here, it seems to me we've got a document, a blank note, which Dow Family and you acknowledge properly, is similar to cash. We've got a lawyer who has stated in court he represents the bank and is now seeking to enforce the bank's rights that are transmitted by the blank note. I mean, what more in this instance, as opposed to some of the notes out there, and believe me, as a circuit court judge for 6 years, including, you know, the unfortunate years of the real estate crash, a lot of foreclosures, okay, and including a ruling from the bench rejecting certain banks from foreclosures for the reasons that you're arguing, but I was never presented with a blank note. So what more should the court have done here? What did the court do wrong? What did the trial court do wrong?
Well, the trial court actually didn't discuss possession when he was looking at the note or admitting the note. So I think one thing he should have done is probably recognize that possession is a separate element that needs to be proved. If you are a bearer of the note, bearer is defined as a person in possession, and that would be typically shown by a witness with knowledge. And counsel for Deutsche Bank has conceded it probably would not have been that hard to bring a witness in to testify to that fact.
Well, but he also quite properly, and you, I think we all recognize that given the unfortunate number, and I do mean that, the unfortunate number of instances like this, that in the isolated case, could be expensive? No. In the cumulative, is it expensive to have people flying out from the central office? Banks, as you may or may not, I assume you know, have become increasingly centralized. The local, it used to be the local banker could make the decision just by talking to you for 10 minutes. Now they have to consult a binder, and if you're dealing with U.S. Bank, that binder was put together by a committee in Minneapolis or Los Angeles, depending on who happens to be the chairman at the moment. And the local people have no authority. They have very limited authority. And so all of the power is concentrated in the big cities. And so you're flying people out to Burnett County, you're flying people out to Fond du Lac to testify to possession, whereas here you have a very well-seasoned experience. I think this is Judge Hughes' case, right?
Judge Berkey, I think.
Oh, Judge Berkey. Well, anyhow, so a judge who's been around and sees that the lawyer representing the bank is presenting the note, which is similar to cash. The bank, the lawyer has already represented himself as not representing himself personally, but representing the bank. From that, it seems to me that a circuit court judge could make a reasonable inference that bank has possession.
Well, I'm comfortable with that for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
First of all, to the point about expense, I don't think it's necessarily a burden for them to have a witness in the courtroom who can testify to possession. In some cases, even loan servicers, if they can establish their foundation.
Well, that wouldn't be the basis of any ruling. Other people's money has never stopped us before, okay? Let's get to the necessity, okay? Why is that an illogical inference on the part of the circuit court judge?
Again, the circuit court judge didn't actually make a finding of possession at the time the note was admitted, but I think the problem goes to something Deutsche Bank's counsel mentioned earlier, which is that they're seeking a presumption that that's good enough. They're seeking a presumption that the element has been satisfied. And then they're also saying it's not really rebuttable. And that is because the attorney has entered that fact based on, or the circuit court judge has made that finding based on their own inference. And I've never seen a case where you have an element of a claim, a fact that has to be found, that's not rebuttable in some way by the other side. What could we possibly have done in this case? Mr. Wunsch could have tried to have the bank's attorney sworn in and could have cross-examined him about possession. But what else can you do?
Counsel, you don't really mean to say that that would be an option you'd want to pursue.
No, I think it would be better if they had a witness.
Okay.
And I love, there was a case that we cited on
the witness. Hang on a second.
Too.
Yeah, so
you
here's.
You can subpoena people, too. I mean, who would you subpoena from the bank and what questions would you ask?
Well, possession is the bank's burden.
Right.
So they need, that is their job to show that that element is satisfied. Or you could call it standing. To get back to Justice Kelly's question about standing, that was something that was contested in the defendant's answer, and it did come up throughout the trial and in the appellate briefing before the Court of Appeals. Just wanted to mention that. It's not a new argument here. But it's their burden.
So would they have a witness come in, take the stand, be sworn in, and then look at the attorney holding the note and say, yes, I see the attorney holding the note. He's a possessor. Is that what the testimony would be?
You would have somebody, as I would, if I were Deutsche Bank, what I would have done is to have a witness there who could say, yes, Deutsche Bank possessed the note, lay the foundation, explain how Deutsche Bank came to possess it.
Stop right there.
Yes.
That's not relevant.
It's not relevant for self-authentication, I'll agree. The note is self-authenticating.
It's not relevant for possession either. We're looking at something that's really quite a physical fact. You hold it, right? That's possession. And so you may bring in a witness to talk about all of that, but what we're trying to figure out is what's essential, right? So is it necessary to call a witness to come and take the stand, be sworn in, and say, I see the attorney, and I see him holding the note. Is that necessary?
I wouldn't ask the question that way. I would have the witness look at the document, say, this is a document in Deutsche Bank's possession, and that satisfies that element.
Why do you need that person to say it instead of the attorney? Both of them are agents of the bank.
Because the witness is under oath. The witness can be cross-examined. There are other rights that attach to the witness.
And what would the nature of your cross-examination be if you're trying to attack the question of possession? I submit to you, there's not much you could ask. Are you holding the note? Yes, I am. No further questions.
If the note is original, maybe that the questioning does stop there, but you have that fact shown.
That's a separate question from possession.
Yeah, but also maybe the note is presented as original. Perhaps it's not.
Okay, that's a separate question from possession. We're just talking about possession right now. Okay.
The note was presented here. The original was presented. That's what it was stated. I'm looking at page 27 in your brief, which attempts to answer the questions that you're being asked, and it says that attorneys are agents of their clients, although as to their physical activities, they are independent contractors, citing the Martin case and the restatement of agency. And then you say, unlike other agents, employers are not responsible for the physical acts of their independent contractors. Possession is a physical act. Furthermore, the only reasonable inference that can be drawn from the record is that Deutsche Bank engaged Kearns, that's the lawyer, right, for the purpose of litigating a foreclosure action, not for maintaining Deutsche Bank's volume of records. Is that your position, that you can't draw an inference that the attorney is representing Deutsche Bank in terms of possession?
Right. The physical act is a different. It's not a normal agency issue.
And then you have an interesting footnote that the Kearns firm represented another entity in a previous foreclosure action against this defendant, and that Kearns physically possessed the note before the plaintiff ever possessed it at all. So who was it possessing for? Kearns, a prior? A Kearns possessing it for, what is it, AHMSI? Or is it possessing it for Deutsche Bank? Or what? Is that still your position? Because I found that interesting. Not that I fully understood it, but I found it interesting.
Right. Those are some of the things that, in this case, are indicia that Deutsche Bank didn't actually possess the note. First of all,
that the attorney didn't possess it for Deutsche Bank.
Correct.
That's what I read you as saying.
Right. They may have been possessing it on somebody else's behalf, and that was one of the issues there because the firm had represented the prior entity that attempted to foreclose on Mr. Wunsch.
And were they holders, AHSMI? Was it a holder?
The plaintiff in that case was AHMSI, or some order of letters there. And, you know, there's other things that are like that that call into question who was the actual possessor, that had this been something that was subject to a witness or cross-examination, as Justice Kelly was alluding to before, could have been asked of the witness. For example, there were discovery responses submitted by Deutsche Bank that indicated it shipped the note to American Home Mortgage Services in 2011. There were three different servicers of the note, and two affidavits submitted in earlier parts of the proceeding said that they were the ones familiar with Deutsche Bank's records in this case. And by the time of trial, there was a third servicer who came and took the stand. There, I forget the order of them, but the one who took the stand at trial was Ocwen, from Ocwen. Before that, it was Homeward. Before that, it was American Home Mortgage Servicing, Inc. So there are a number of red flags here that raise the issue of who actually did possess the note. There's also a line of cases that says possession actually has to be established at the time the complaint is filed. We cited some of those in our brief.
Complaint it's versus not, it, trial.
Sorry?
At the time of complaint.
At the time the complaint is filed.
Rather
yes.
than trial.
Yeah, and that would support standing as well, the plaintiff standing to be in the courtroom in the first place.
Counsel, I hearken to the jury instruction that the court gives in instructing the jury that counsel's comments or statements are not evidence. And it seems to me, since they're not evidence, and and I don't think this court wants to say that counsel's statements are evidence because we would really open up a can of worms. So, assuming that counsel's statements are not evidence, what is it? Is it that we're looking at here? The conduct of the counsel? We've got to, your opposing counsel, since counsel's statements are not evidence, it has to be, it seems to me it has to be the fact that a presumption attaches if an attorney for a party, in this instance in a foreclosure action, shows up and has in his or her hand the note. So that's what, from that conduct, is it your understanding your opposing counsel is arguing a presumption?
I believe so, and that's what's so troubling in this case is because they're putting together multiple pieces of things and saying that they're evidence. The fact that they have the self-authenticating note, the fact that they have an attorney in the courtroom presenting that note, The attorney made some statements about the note as well. It said, hey, Judge, this is the original. And at that point, counsel for Mr. Wunsch objected to that attorney's testimony. So we've got a number of little things, but they don't add up to evidence. And I would agree with you that attorney statements are not evidence. We cited in our brief at page 29 the case of Kenneker versus Romano, which said, or cited this court's rule, Supreme Court Rule 20.3.7, a comment to that, a witness is required to testify on the basis of personal knowledge, while an advocate, an attorney, is expected to explain and comment on evidence given by others. They're not the same thing.
But counsel, I'm looking at page appendix 020 of the plaintiff, of the Deutsche Bank's appendix, and finding number 6 on page 020 says, this is the trial court finding. Page 020. The plaintiff is the holder of the original note endorsed in blank. The court is satisfied that the plaintiff has in its possession the original ink note. The plaintiff produced the original ink note at trial and the court examined it. The court is satisfied that it is the original note executed by Wunsch. Exhibit 1 is a true and accurate copy of the original ink note. So the trial court made a finding that the plaintiff has in its possession the original ink note, right?
It did say that, yes.
It did. Now, it seems to me, what's the standard for reviewing that finding?
It's de novo, because in all cases, to get to that finding of possession, you have to interpret various provisions of Chapter 403. And if it were a pure evidentiary finding, that would be one thing, but it's not, because you have to interpret statute and construe statute to get there. And that's a matter of law.
Yeah, ordinarily, an evidentiary ruling is determined by erroneous exercise of discretion. And there it would be whether or not the trial court is clearly in error, right?
Right.
And you do take the position somewhere in your brief that it's that it was clearly erroneous if you did, even if you use that standard, because there's nothing in the record to support it, because you only have testimony of an unsworn witness. That's your position.
Correct.
Well, how do you, one of the reasons that the court might have taken this case was because in the petition for a review, a Deutsche Bank said, well, in a prior case by the same district, or two out of the three judges were the same, the court said in paragraph 11, I think that's the Harrop case, the court said in paragraph 11 that the attorney for the bank in that case, that was Bank of Mellon, was the agent, and it did have a possession, and you didn't need anything else. Now, there are multiple issues in that case, but it's quite clear that in paragraph 11, they held just the opposite of what you want this court to hold.
Yeah, they did say that, and I would agree with you, it was one of a laundry list of issues that court considered. And to the extent it gets cited or reviewed by other parties, which I'm not sure it will because it's unpublished per curiam.
Yes, and then they don't cite it for persuasive value.
Right. But I think that, and also I would note that the parties in that case didn't really seem to supply any authority for their positions in that case. But I think that case shows the dangers of Deutsche Bank's position were it to be accepted. And in that case, you'll notice we had a trial without witnesses. The bank came in and presented the note. That note was accepted. The court found possession. There were admissions by the other party about the failure to make the payments. And that was that.
But not that the note was the original or that the bank had possession.
I don't recall precisely that detail, but I think that the court must have made that finding that the bank had possession one way or the other.
But the defendant there didn't admit to that.
Correct. I'm sorry. Yes, the defendant did not admit to that. Right.
What is there any difference between Harrop and this case that you see, other than there were multiple issues in Harrop?
Well, I think this possession was contested throughout this case, you know, the whole time. And in the answer in the trial court, there were objections made to admitting the note. There were objections made to possession. I don't know what authority. It doesn't sound like any authority was cited to the trial court in Harrop. There are other ways to handle this. You know, if you do show up at trial with an original note, the way one court handled it was to say, okay, I'll take the note, but I'm going to hold its admission in abeyance until a witness can come in and testify to possession. And I think that would be an appropriate way for the court to handle it.
Well, you know, the trial court decided the issue of possession and the validity of the original without any witnesses. They did it in limine to begin with and then did it again in the middle of the trial. So the bank really didn't have an opportunity to say, okay, I'll bring in a witness. You want a witness? We'll give you a witness.
Well, I think that was a strategic decision they made, that they wouldn't bring in a witness, but I think they had plenty of notice, regardless, that they should have.
They had notice from you, but they had also notice from the court that they didn't have to bring in a witness. They're really claiming in part, very tenderly and gingerly, what they wanted on remand, to give them an opportunity, that the court had already made a decision and it was in their favor, and they don't have to ask the court to undo a decision in their favor. They can just carry on.
Yeah, that issue does go to the remedy that they're seeking in this
right.
case, that they couldn't possibly have known they needed to put evidence on of possession. So give us remand so we can go just put that one little piece in and get this thing tied up. But I think that's inappropriate because they did have notice. They should have had notice that they needed to put in this evidence. Again, the defendant's answer contested possession from the very beginning. You had case law, you know, Dow Family, PHC Bank, a number of those cases had just been decided. You have cases from other jurisdictions indicating possession is an issue that should be supported with evidence. So they made the strategic decision not to. They could have. They could have possibly even introduced that evidence with the witness that they had at trial. But they didn't, and we shouldn't fix it. We shouldn't come to this court to fix it for them.
I have another question. Whether in the record or something that the court can take judicial notice of, has foreclosure been successfully done, or was your client still in possession of the property?
The judgment has not, I don't think that, you know, part two of the foreclosure action has happened.
Okay. And is that in the record?
I don't believe it is. I think that all we have in the record is the circuit court's decision as to what the status of the property was at that time.
Okay.
I see my time is up. Thank you, and we ask that you affirm the Court of Appeals.
I want to start with a small correction, maybe not so small. The trial court, almost immediately after it admitted the original note into evidence, did say the plaintiff is, in my mind, the holder in due course of a note endorsed in blank, and they can proceed on that. And that's page 20 of the trial transcript right at the get-go, page 79 of the appendix.
Say that again, would you? I'm sorry.
The trial court, the citation is 79 in the appendix. It's
yep.
Page 20 of the trial transcript.
Do you acknowledge that an attorney's comments is not evidence?
Yeah, we wouldn't suggest that the attorney's comments were evidence, and we're not relying on anything that the attorney said. I think most attorneys, whether they're in a deposition or a trial, are trained to sort of speak out loud as to what they're doing. I'm now putting in front of the witness Exhibit 1, which is a copy of blank, blank, blank. I think that's, you know, so that the record is clear. That's what counsel was doing there, so the record is clear as to what was occurring in the courtroom. But I think that's separate and apart from this idea of whether the judge can use his faculties to observe that the plaintiff is in possession.
Okay, so it is that. Your opposing counsel says that the reason you argue for the presumption of that observation is because there is no evidence in the record. Do you agree with that?
Well, whether you call it a presumption or you call it evidence, I'm not sure it matters. I think the trial court is entitled to observe who is in possession of the note that is brought to court. And in this case, the trial court made that observation that plaintiff's counsel was in physical possession. He made the factual determination that this was the original note. And based on that, he made his findings as to both the nature of the original note and the physical possession of it. And, you know, I mean, if a note like this one that's endorsed in blank is as good as cash, and that's what the law says, because it is linked to physical possession, then what we don't want to do is establish what I would characterize as artificial testimonial barriers to its enforcement.
Well,
these things are supposed to be freely negotiated.
When you deal with the regular records exception, which is what used to be very akin to this thing, for decades upon decades, we had the witness come in and testify to the necessary foundational requirements. So did that make sense? I don't know if that made sense, but that was the rule. I'll tell you what my problem is and see if you can give me an epiphany. I think rules of evidence are rules of evidence. If you want to squish out of the rules of evidence, you go to sub 23, which is other indicia of reliability and trustworthiness. Otherwise, rules are rules. You don't fall within the rules of evidence here. You fall within the rules of logic. Boy, it makes sense. And what I'm struggling with is, does this, boy, it makes sense, you know, it's logical. Do you substitute this, it makes sense, and it's logical, you know, right, with the rules of evidence, which are there for a reason. You define evidence. What is evidence? Evidence is the sworn testimony, we say, under our law. It is the stipulation that are offered and accepted by the parties. That's what evidence is. And you have a whole new twist of evidence. And for someone who loves the rules of evidence, I'm having a hard time adjusting to the twist. So
I don't think that we do, Your Honor. I mean, as far as the evidentiary requirement to admit the original note into evidence, we satisfy that. That's where the self-authentication comes in.
Yeah, I'm not talking about self-authentication.
And, you know, as far as whether or not the trial court, whether or not this creates a presumption when plaintiff's counsel shows up with the original note.
Presumption of possession. That's what we're talking about.
Presumption of possession. Yeah. I like rules too, and it has been the rule for more than 120 years, and probably quite a bit long before that, going back to 1758 decision of Miller versus Race and Lord Mansfield, that you can show up in court with the original note, and that's all you need to do to enforce it. That's what the rule has been. And we would submit that that is what the rule should remain.
Counsel, your red light is on. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you both for good arguments. We are going to take a brief adjournment until 1:30 when we will be back for our third case of the day. Thank you.